And welcome to SASS, the Screen, Air and Stage Show, the show where we talk about everything and anything in the big wide world of entertainment. I'm Nick.
And I'm Hannah, and we are currently broadcasting from the new Sin Studios.
Yes. Woo-hoo. Really got some lovely mood lighting in here, and it's a really, really lovely environment. So fantastic to be broadcasting in these new studios. Now, if you're just catching up with us now, we are in our podcast season, and this is SASS's fourth season. So it has been a huge ride for us so far. And this is our podcast season, episode 5 of the podcast season. Now, before we start, if you haven't checked out any of our other episodes, go on omnistudio.com or Spotify. We are also on Spotify, where you can check out all our episodes from season 1, 2, 3 and 4. We're just currently doing some editing on all of them, but they will be up all very soon.
Absolutely. And on that, if you can't find our episodes because Omni's being weird, go onto our Facebook page, facebook.com/sass, and we put up the links for every episode every time we post.
Yeah, so we've got a huge episode lined up for today. I feel like I say that every time, but it is going to be a big episode today because we're looking at biopics. Now, biopics is quite an intense and enormous subject. It is films talking about biographies, so pretty much biographical stories and true stories translated to the screen.
Now, obviously, we've done very similar episodes before where we've done the autobiography and things like that. So we are doing more of a sub, I'd say a subgenre.
I think it is. And I think part of the podcast season was to pick out certain things that we have talked about previously, dig a little bit deeper into them and unpack questions that we may have only briefly touched on.
Correct. And we will be touching on Bohemian Rhapsody again. And before you go, Sass, seriously, this is too much. But it's okay. It's all for the sake of discussion.
It is all for the sake of discussion. And if you have any thoughts on today's show as well, get in touch with all our socials, as Hannah said before, our Facebook page. We'd love to hear your thoughts and opinions because they really add some depth to our show. But without further ado, let's get into discussion. And I thought before we actually start delving into specific entertainment pieces, and in this case, specific films related around the biopic, I thought it'd be cool to raise some questions. Because I think the biopic is a really intriguing, as Hannah said, subgenre, I would almost say. So I'm going to raise a few questions and we're going to think about these throughout the course of the show, come back to them and also maybe address them at the end. So one of the first ones is, what are the responsibilities of the filmmaker when creating a biopic? And this you could also compare to making a documentary film. Hannah, what are your thoughts on this first question?
Well, I think we've touched on a similar concept before of the importance of accuracy.
Yes.
And authenticity.
Yes, absolutely.
If the producer or the movie maker doesn't know that much background, or they aren't able to dig deeper into the finer details, they're going to get called out for it.
Absolutely. And I think this comes down to also social subject and director relationship. I think that's also an important part. What is the relationship between the actor who's playing this subject, who's playing this prominent figure, and the director behind the film? Is that an important part? Does that have to be prominent, or can it be, not so prominent? I think that's something really interesting.
Well, I think that's definitely something we'll be touching on when we compare Bohemian Rhapsody and Rocketman.
Yeah, definitely.
Very stark.
Definitely. Also in this area, perspective and structure, and I think it fundamentally comes down to how the truth is portrayed and whether the perspective or the structure which is utilized in the production renders the overall piece to be truthful. Because I think at the end of the day, the fundamental question is anything that questions the truth acceptable in a biopic? Because we compare it to documentary, and I think documentary has much more strict responsibilities when they portray a true story, because people go to watch documentaries for a true story. Now, people do as well for biopics. But at the end of the day, maybe they can have a bit more of a creative flair. But overall, I think it fundamentally comes down to, is anything that kind of questions the truth or maybe displays the truth in not so truthful way, if that makes sense, is that acceptable?
I think it also raises the question of, is it the filmmaker's responsibility to keep the subject completely objective and not take it from a more personal perspective or a subjective perspective?
Definitely.
And again, I think we will see that difference as well when we go to discuss further.
Absolutely. And one last question to raise, we have addressed this in past episodes, and it's the idea that biopics, before even seeing the film, it almost seems that they have some sort of leverage over fictional films. And we're going to be delving into the why. Why is that? Why is it when we go to a biopic, we somehow have this heightened sense of impact, even before the film has started. Is it because it's a true story? Why are true stories so impactful? So that's a really interesting point that we're going to be raising, because I know we have talked about it in our past episodes, and it will be great to delve into that idea.
You've also just reminded me of a question I would now really like to I would now really like to have answered. And we didn't actually discuss this before, but the thought has just come to me. Will you, okay, is the filmmaker able to convey the truth as accurately as they would in a documentary versus in the film?
In a biopic.
And I'm referencing a very specific example here, and I'll get to it. But is the documentary enough to tell the story? Or do you think that you need a film to reinforce what was already?
And as part of a biopic, do you need creative flair to reinforce the story?
Correct.
Great, interesting, in-depth, intense questions. Let's go into our discussion, and we're going to be coming back to these. I've got them written down, so I will be bringing them up throughout the course of the episode. So as Hannah said at the start of the episode, we're going to be looking at two musical films in particular, and I think we can start with these, Bohemian Rhapsody and the newly released Rocket Man. These two are both musical biopics that explore the lives of Freddie Mercury and Elton John, respectively. And they've gained lots of critical success. In particular, Bohemian Rhapsody won multiple wins at the Academy Awards this year in 2019, taking out Best Actor in a Leading Role for Rami Malek. Obviously, Rocket Man was not a part of that award ceremony, but it'll be really interesting to see how their success is at next year's Academy Awards.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if they walked, if they, well, I would be surprised if they didn't walk away with anything. I mean, you know, we'll go into further discussion, but if not for the main things like, you know, best actor and soundtrack, definitely for cinematography, because I've got some cinematography bias here.
Great.
But just to remind audiences, if you have no idea what we're talking about, Bohemian Rhapsody tells the story of Freddie Mercury, who was the lead singer for the band Queen, that was very, very popular in the 1970s and 80s. And Rocket Man explores the life of Elton John, international pop star, everything star.
Absolutely.
And pretty much looking at his life from childhood up until he becomes sober and out of rehab.
Absolutely.
So we've got a lot of, first of all, let's point out the similarities. We have two gay, very flamboyant, very extroverted and quirky rock stars.
Yes.
And these are all positive, by the way.
Yes.
Which further highlights this, that they say they face very similar challenges. You know, and so, so there was the AIDS crisis, overcoming the gay stereotypes, dealing with fame, alcoholism, drug abuse, sex addiction, working with co-workers. Now, something I would like to point out before we go further, John Reed managed both.
Yes.
Which I think not enough people know about. John Reed managed Queen for some time, and he also managed Elton John, which I find really interesting because they both would have been sort of in like parallel times. So they would have been developing at, you know, at a very similar pace.
Definitely.
Which I find really interesting as well. And then, of course, also when you watch Rocket Man and Bohemian Rhapsody, you'll understand further but how both characters were in quite abusive relationships and were badly manipulated into going solo, which ultimately led to a lot of problems. So you've got a lot of similarities.
Yes.
So some people might go to Rocket Man having already seen Bohemian Rhapsody thinking, okay, we're doing a lot of this again. Obviously, you have to overcome that because two very different stories, two very different people and
definitely
very different music as well.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
So you have to overcome that. But I think it does also highlight what the music industry was at that time and also what the normal challenges of life were at that time as well. You know, that classic, you know, the family expectations and the abnormality of homosexuality and the, you know, and what happened with becoming a famous musician and the cost of fame and everything like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. And as I said before, these films have taken the world by storm because of their powerful storytelling and also that revisit to the late 1900s. I think any film that kind of revisits that period, especially for us when we've been born into the 21st century, it's always intriguing to revisit a time where we weren't alive and see what the social and historical and cultural context was around then. But through music as well and through two people's own journey, it's really interesting. I think we can delve into one of the main differences with these films was the musical theatre-esque.
I'd actually forgotten about that difference, massive difference.
It's not a spoiler, I don't think, but Bohemian Rhapsody, their music evolved through actual performances on stage, which was very literal and very almost lifelike. Whereas with Rocketman, a lot of the musical performances actually came through the character singing to the screen, very much in a Broadway way where it was almost a soliloquy or a monologue and it came through song.
I thought of it as very La La Land.
Yes, you watched the movie, you came out and I was like, yep, La La Land, I can definitely see
it. Very La La Land. And another thing as well, that there were different characters singing different songs. It wasn't just Elton John, which I really liked as well. So, and I think another difference with that is I found out recently that in Bohemian Rhapsody, Rami didn't actually sing any of the songs.
Yes.
It was a mix of a singer from Canada.
Yes.
Who apparently sounded exactly like Freddie
Mercury. Canadian singer, Mark Martel.
Nice. And also a mix of the Queen music.
Absolutely.
Whereas in Rocketman, you have Taron
Egerton.
That's right. It's Taron Egerton. And he's singing the songs.
Yeah. That was a big difference. And I think, I think kudos to both the groups, I think fantastic for Taron to be able to do that because not only is he exploring this character and how to embody this character, he's also learning how to sing and how to sing like this character. It's almost two separate mediums.
I don't want to spend too much time on this point because there's a lot of others, but I just want to ask quickly, did you prefer having the more musical theatre style?
I did, yes.
But I think I did too.
Look, we're going to come down to a decision at the end, which will actually sum up what our favourite of the two is. But for Rocketman in particular, I really like this musical-esque. I thought it was just creative. And you weren't expecting it. As you said beforehand, the people that have come from Bohemian Rhapsody and then they watched this film, they weren't expecting it. And I wasn't. And it was the first song, The Bitch Is Back, I think.
Absolutely.
And it was like, oh, okay, we're doing this.
We're doing it,
yeah. And look, we're musical theatre geeks. We love it. So it was kind of a tick in the box for us. But it was good because it was so unexpected, I think.
And I think it did a really good job at showcasing Elton's repertoire.
Yeah.
Not just Elton's repertoire, but also really putting the spotlight on his songwriter.
Definitely.
And I've just forgotten his name, but I think like discovering the importance of his role in the building of Elton's career.
Absolutely.
And seeing the different songs that he was writing and then them being performed with the music. So, and again, we're such a sucker for Broadway.
We are a sucker. We love it.
I mean, this might be a little bit of a spoiler, but Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting, the performance that they do for that.
Oh, it's so good.
We're talking like, it is absolutely amazing. And you just couldn't help but like smile from ear to ear during that. Because I'm like, oh, this is so good. It's like a music video and a movie. And it's like, I would rewatch Rocket Man just to see the musical performances again.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I would also say that there's another one. I can't actually remember the name of the song now, but I'll tell you. We'll come back to that. But okay, moving on from that. That was one of the big differences.
One other difference, this is actually quite finite, but I really want to bring this up. So Bohemian Rhapsody had a runtime of about 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Okay.
Rocketman was just over 2 hours. Now, I know it's only 20 minutes difference, but I walked out of the cinema and I was a bit like, I noticed the difference in time.
That's interesting. I wouldn't have thought of that.
Yeah. What did you think, Hannah? Because I noticed that when I walked out of Bohemian Rhapsody, I'm like, wow, that was quite a hefty, long movie, but it didn't feel like long. I knew it was long.
It was a lot.
But I think, again, you've got your expectations coming to Rocketman. It felt a little short, and I was, like, wanting to get your opinions on that.
Well, I was speaking to my dad about this yesterday, and he felt like it ended too abruptly.
Mm.
Like, oh, here's the thing. I don't know if I should spoil it or not, because it's not a spoiler, because it happened. But, you know, Elton finishes Rehab, and it's like, I'm still standing, bye.
That's the end.
Okay, what's happening? I would have loved to have seen a little bit more like what, you know, as part of the movie, what he did after that.
Mm, definitely, and what
happened
then.
And him evolving. Yeah, because it spoke about a lot of what happened after he came out of rehab. And some of those things, I'm like, I would have liked to see that.
Yeah, definitely.
That's so weird that they would have left that out, like him meeting his new partner and them having 2 children.
Yeah.
I would have liked to see a little bit of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
As well. So that's something I hadn't noticed, but I think it wouldn't have hurt them to have an extra 10 minutes just to extend the story a little bit, give us a little bit more of what we want.
Yeah.
Another massive difference, and possibly the main difference, is Freddie Mercury is not here with us anymore.
Yes.
Elton John is very much here with us.
And again, this is going to come back to the fundamental question of the subject versus director relationship.
Correct. So this is where it's going to tie in now. You had Freddie Mercury, who passed away when he was 46, I think. Mm-hmm. And so Bohemian Rhapsody was the work of the filmmaking team and also the other band members of Queen telling their story about Freddie Mercury from their perspective. Mm-hmm. Then you had Rocketman, where you had Elton John, who was the executive producer for his own movie, which I might be keen to get your opinion on, because I'm still not sure about that. That idea of producing your own autobiography.
Well, I have a really interesting point to raise on that when you're ready.
Yeah.
It's the idea that I think Bohemian Rhapsody, by having the whole band involved in the process, it actually allowed for there to be focus on the other band members in the film. And it helped with context, and it helped with having a break from Freddie Mercury's storyline, which actually made both storylines work together nicely. By focusing on the band members at some stage, it just helped to make a little bit more context and let us a little bit breathe. With Rocketman, it was mainly just on Elton. They actually didn't cover the other band members. Now, I didn't find this problematic, but it might have been beneficial to give the story a bit more context and a bit more weight.
Yes. And I think, you know, and again, this is Elton's story. So you can't deny that he's going to get his own story wrong. But he was telling it all from his subjective perspective. So I was speaking to my dad about this, and he felt really strongly that the parents were copying so much negativity in this movie. He started working on the movie a month after his mum passed away, which meant that there was no outside source to actually come in and give their input and say, hold on, are you sure that actually played out the way that it did? I don't think his songwriting partner was involved at all. So it seemed like this was all very much from how Elton perceived his life to be and how Elton perceived his childhood to be. And you can't deny that that's how he felt, and that's, you know, the way.
Exactly.
You know, and his passion. But there were parts of the movie where I was thinking, hold on, that is so how he wants us to perceive that particular person, situation, event. You know, how are we to know that that is truly what happened? And if... And you know, and there's also the risk of Elton putting himself on a bit of a pedestal as well, painting himself as the hero of this story.
When
it never really seems like he actually takes that much responsibility for what happened.
I think it comes down to a fundamental idea that where does the truth come from in this case? I think you can say, well, because Elton John was the executive producer, the content is truthful.
Yes.
But maybe the perspective isn't.
No, very much so.
Because the perspective is maybe a little one-sided. So truth can come in many different ways in a biopic. It can come from perspective. It can come from structure. It can come from content. It can come from the actor-audience relationship, actor-director relationship. So maybe in this case, while the content, yes, it's truthful because it's obviously the man himself saying this is what happened, this is what happened, the perspective maybe isn't truthful to everyone.
This does raise the question, though, if Freddie Mercury was still alive today, would he be happy with how they made it?
And would he be involved in the production of it? Because I think there would be some cases where the person who is the subject of a film sometimes say, no, I won't be involved in it. I'll just kind of be a bystander and see what happens.
Yes.
Not every person is going to want to be in the production of their film, understandably. So whether he was alive, whether he is alive, and whether he would actually involve himself in the production.
I mean, I think from my perspective, I thought that the way they covered Freddie Mercury's personal progression, I actually thought they did that very well, and they had the right amount.
Yes.
You know, and maybe if Freddie Mercury, he said, I might have liked a little bit more of that, or you should have done that a different way. We couldn't know now. But wise in Rocketman, there was a little bit too much self-loathing.
Okay.
This is a very strong opinion of mine.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And don't come for me. I still think Rocketman was a fantastic movie.
Phenomenal.
I would absolutely watch it again. But there were parts where I kept thinking, oh, but you have such an amazing life, and you've achieved so much in such a short period of time, and you're pitting yourself. There were parts in the moment where I felt like there was a little bit too much ego stroking.
I think you can look
himself.
At, yeah, and I definitely see that. I think for both films, you can see there could be potential flaws. For Bohemian Rhapsody, there's a flaw in that Mercury wasn't involved in it, so how can we render it truthful? But then there's a flaw in Rocketman in that he was so maybe too overly involved, so that therefore how can we kind of find truth in the perspective?
Right.
I think both can be problematic.
And should they have made a documentary about Elton John before making a film? Just so you understood the facts a little bit more, because otherwise you're looking at him growing up in his childhood home thinking, oh, his parents are so neglectful. Well, how are we to know? How can we know his parents are dead?
Exactly, yeah.
So that's another major difference.
Yes.
So you've got the musical theatre component, you have the actual involvement, which is probably the biggest and probably one of the biggest contrasts we won't see again for a long time. I think this is one of those incredibly rare cases where you actually have a singer making their own movie while they're still alive.
Mm.
Which, what are your thoughts on that? Do you find that a little bit peculiar that, you know, that a singer has made his own legacy movie while he's still alive?
Look, I think for someone that is still alive to make their own, make a film about themselves, it does make sense because you have the accessibility to kind of get their own emotion into the story and you have that unique access to be able to talk to them and be able to get them involved. You know, obviously Elton John was the executive producer, so he had huge influence in it and I think that's an advantage that sometimes is obviously lost when the actor, or when the actual subject has unfortunately passed away.
Yes.
In regards to legacy, I can see why people make films after someone has passed away because it definitely extends their legacy beyond from when they were just alive. But then I do also see the potential that creating a film when the person is still alive can have on legacy. I think it's a balance.
Yes.
I see benefits in both areas, and I don't think I can pick one that's more beneficial or more impactful.
Okay, can I present a third option then?
Yeah.
Something I've just remembered now is a lot of pop stars at the moment are making the sort of documentary-styled films where it's a bit of a like, follow me in the year of life, see what I do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's shot very professionally.
Yes.
So Lady Gaga has one.
Yes.
Beyonce has one. I think Pink has one,
and other
singers do as well.
So maybe that's kind of finding the in-between where it's not really a legacy film, but more a update film, you could say.
See what I do, a bit of a behind-the-scenes.
Yeah, little...
Do you think that's the perfect medium? Because it's you've kind of got documentary because it's still their life and you're seeing what's happening and you still get their perspective and you get their thoughts.
Definitely. I believe that is an alternative. As long as the content in there is impactful. It's not just, you know, I'm off to a music concert. Oh, that was fun. What do I have next? You've got to have some sort of, while it is documentary filmmaking, you've got to have some sort of fiction sentiment in there, in that, you know, there's the introduction and there's a climax and there's a resolution, like a fiction film, like a fiction story. It's important to have that. And look, the climax doesn't have to be huge, you know, it doesn't have to be a huge event, but just something that leads the story to. Because if it's just kind of one thing after the other where there's no real progression of anything, it doesn't really benefit anyone. I don't think it benefits the artist and I don't think it benefits the audience. It's important that while a documentary is obviously documentary style, it kind of has the fiction elements of storytelling through it. And I think when you get that, that's when it could be really beneficial.
Yes. Okay.
So now we are at the end of that discussion, I think.
Yes. Just to quickly top on that. No. Just to, like, in a sense, wrap it up.
Yeah, definitely.
For any of what we just discussed, Rocketman is now in cinemas. I think it is still in cinemas for quite a little bit. So obviously, absolutely go see it.
Yes.
Like, and, you know, and don't think of this discussion as turning you off the movie. I think of it as something to think about after you've actually seen it.
And those questions we raised at the start, they really relate to both these films and something that you might not always think about when you go see a biopic.
Mm.
And especially for these musical biopics, it would definitely be a good idea to have these thoughts and have these questions in your mind because it just heightens perspective of the film, but also heightens your impact of the film.
Definitely. And you might walk into Rocketman thinking like, ugh, okay, this had Elton in it and everything. But you might walk out being like, wow, that I feel like I know so much more about him. And thank God he was a part of it because it feels so much more accurate and Taron was able to sing exactly like him, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe for Queen, you'll think, okay, maybe they didn't really cover everything I would have liked. I would have liked more Freddie.
Think of it
as sort of a platform
that
you can start off with. So again, Rocketman is now in cinemas. Bohemian Rhapsody is no longer in cinemas, but I believe it's out on DVD.
Out on DVD.
And
accessible.
It's probably going to be on Netflix soon.
Yes.
And for any of those sort of pop documentaries that we mentioned, like the Beyonce has one called Homecoming and Lady Gaga has one as well, they're all on Netflix.
Now, so Hannah, a favourite out of those two. We did promise audiences that we would pick a favourite. Again, it's actually really
it's
tricky
really
to
hard.
Ask.
Because if you'd asked me a couple of days ago, I would have said Rocketman hands down. But since having these discussions where, you know, there were some parts of the film I felt a little bit like, okay, this is kind of like whacking me with emotion. I think I would still say Rocketman.
Okay, cool.
Purely because of the musical performance.
Yes.
I just loved how they showcased all of the songs.
And some of them were so creative. We're not going to do a spoiler for one, no, but I know the one you're thinking of. I'm looking at you now.
Yeah.
There is a very creative one. It's very absurd, but it's so awesome.
Yeah, and there, you know, and there were some songs where I was thinking I would love to have been part of the writing team when they thought of that idea.
I know,
just so, so I would probably pick Rocketman for that reason. What about you, Nick?
Look, both have such awesome qualities, and I think while Rocketman, I love its musical flair, I love its creativeness. I have to pick Bohemian Rhapsody,
and
it's mainly for the longer runtime, just allowing a little bit more time to really invest in the storyline, and also for the fact that there is focus on kind of the band as an entirety.
Yeah.
It just helps with the context building and also with the relationships between the band members. They, you know, they were so pivotal to Queen's progression and Queen's rise to fame, so I think by having that, and that also adds to the longer runtime through having that focus. So, look, by a little smidgen, I'm going to say Bohemian Rhapsody.
And same with me as well. It's very, because I actually rewatched Bohemian Rhapsody a few weeks ago, and I really enjoyed rewatching it. I thought it's, because I think the second time you watch it, you're much more invested in the story rather than, oh my God, it's Queen. You know, this time it's actually, wow, this is actually quite a story.
Yes.
So I would also agree, probably just over the line. But I'm still glad that we had opposing options.
Yes, I know.
Still good to spice
a bit of
it
a sass head to head.
Absolutely. So again, if you have any thoughts on either of the movies, if you had a preference, please let us know on facebook.com/sass. Before, I'm also very curious as well, just before we go to the next discussion, we're going to insert some voice memos of what some of our family members thought
Exactly. I don't think it's all about voice from us. It's fantastic to get voice from others. So let's cut now to some thoughts on Rocketman.
I really enjoyed Rocketman movie. I enjoyed the fact that it was part musical and part biography of Elton's life. And I, of course, loved all the music throughout the movie.
Yeah, look, I really enjoyed the movie Rocketman. The lead actor was brilliant. I think the thing I liked most about it was just it portrayed the life of Reg Dwight and then Elton John really nicely, and it also followed the book well by Philip Norman, which is a great book. Lots of great songs. Really enjoyed the opening song, which was The Bitch Is Back, and Tiny Dancer, which are two of my favourite Elton John songs. So came out of the movie feeling very uplifted. Great insight into his life. A fantastic performer, and just leaves a fantastic legacy of great songs.
I really liked the movie. I thought it was on equal with Bohemian Rhapsody. I wasn't sure about the musical part, but then I really got into it as the movie went along, because Elton's such a unique person, so I thought he would have loved that they made it that way. So, yeah, I really enjoyed the musical aspect, and my favourite song probably... My favourite song of Elton's is Philadelphia Freedom, but that wasn't in the movie, so that was a bit of a letdown. But in the movie, my favourite song probably was the Rocketman scene.
Rocketman was a great movie. I particularly enjoyed how the movie showed Elton John's life from when he was a young boy until much older. And I liked how each song kind of represented an aspect in his life. I enjoyed it being a musical, lots of songs, lots of dancing, and yeah, overall it was a really great film.
And so now moving on from that dichotomy, we are now going, we love our big words on SAS. Before we go into another big discussion, I want to sideline a little bit and just reference a couple of biopics out at the moment or released kind of recently that would be really worth touching on. I recently went to see Tolkien.
Mm.
And if you don't know what I'm talking about, let me give you some background. So the fantasy author J.R.R. Tolkien, if you don't know who he is, he wrote Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit. He's the one that basically did all that.
Mm.
And so just recently they've released a movie detailing pretty much his life leading up until he starts writing The Hobbit, which is the first novel that he publishes. So this, at the moment, it's had a very limited release. It's only playing at a few cinemas across Melbourne and not very many times a day. So I went to go and see it, and hands down some of the best cinematography I'd ever seen. Absolutely. And I'm an absolute sucker for cinematography.
We love our cinematography. If you missed, we had a scene analysis episode and we just talked cinematography.
We tore that apart. So if you're a dedicated SAS listener, you would know that I'm big on my cinematography, or I have become more so since doing SAS.
Mm.
So for a start, the cinematography was absolutely beautiful and the color palette. And, you know, bear in mind, this is like early 1900s as well. So you've got that very old fashioned style. And I love
period dramas. I tell you what.
Absolutely. So, and at some point, Tolkien attends Oxford University, and that's also beautiful to see, that kind of
always
big university style in London. And another thing with the cinematography is that, if you don't know, Tolkien actually fights in World War I for England, and the way they convey the war scene is very harrowing.
Mm.
And if you read any literature on Tolkien, it's known that he had a very good sense of describing war in his novels because of his real life experience.
Mm.
And so this is not to give a spoiler because it is part of his life, but there's this one shot that stayed in my mind of him lying passed out in a pool of blood and he's just surrounded by dead bodies.
Mm.
And that one shot, it just sticks with you. And, you know, it's just one of the examples of just great filmmaking.
Mm.
So enough about the cinematography. That was great. We had some very good acting. Lily Collins plays the female lead,
mm-hmm.
who's very good. And Nicholas Holt. Thank you very much. He played a great adult Tolkien, as well as his supporting cast. I play the three best friends that he grows up with as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so on and so forth. So acting was also really lovely. I thought the script was quite good as well. So overall, I thought it was quite a nice film and it touched on some of the things. My one criticism is that I wanted them to go into the writing because that's what he's known for. So, you know, it only gives us a 2-minute scene where it actually touches on his writing at all. And you still see how his development leads to that. But there is a part of me that was like, oh, but I wanted to see him create this universe a little bit.
This comes down to the question of expectations within the biopic genre or subgenre. When we go see a film like Bohemian Rhapsody, like Rocketman, which we've touched on today, we expect it to be about their musical journeys. And I think about this film, people expect it to be about the writing because, you know, he's this famous writer. He created this Lord of the Rings and Hobbit franchise, which is huge worldwide.
Mm.
So you go into this film and your expectations are, yep, it's going to be about his writing. It's going to be about his writing. And
yes,
then to kind of, we'll say subtly thwart, because I don't think it's negative, those expectations to focus on something else. It can have the power to enhance the film or it can have the power to really impact the film.
Yeah. So you can tell that it was intended to focus more on his development and, you know, and his life leading up, and because that's the person that he is shaped to be when he begins writing. And I definitely think that is a credit to the film because, you know, when you love authors or musicians, the whole point is that you don't really know what they went through to get to that point.
Yes.
So it was great to see, you know, if you read Tolkien's biography, it's a tough life growing up in the early 1900s where there was disease and poverty and war. And he worked so hard to get to that point.
Yeah.
So you have to admire the movie for really highlighting that. It was just a little bit like, oh, okay, I just watched a 2-hour, well, I think it was under 2 hours.
Yeah, just under 2 hours.
Yeah, it was just under 2 hours. I just watched almost 2 hours of a guy not really doing what he's known for.
But maybe it's playing on the biopic in this case because it's going along the lines that of his life. And I think maybe if you focused on the writing, you know, while that definitely is part of his life and a prominent part of his life, perhaps it's not the part that needs focus. Perhaps it's better to go and look at the part of his life that audiences don't know about because maybe that enhances him as a person, as a character, and as a creator of this new franchise.
Mm.
So maybe if they just focused on the writing, it would be too, you know, one-sided where it's like, we know this and it's great to look at this, but what else is there out there?
Yes.
So maybe by kind of connecting his early life and his life that we don't know about to his writing that we know about, you get this much more complex idea of who the actual person was.
Yes, and you now have reminded me it, you know, I'm sounding very like I'm you know, I'm crapping on the movie because yeah, that's right. But the truth is that they actually do focus a lot on how he develops the Lord of the Rings series as well.
Which is really good.
Which you've reminded me of now, because there are parts in the movie where he talks about a language that he created, which ends up being Elvish.
Oh, of course.
Which is what he uses for The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
So you do see a lot of his thinking process, just not the writing, of course. So depends on, like, I think while Rocketman and Bohemian Rhapsody is sort of like across the board audiences, if you know music, go see it. I think you've got to know of him to appreciate it. And I'd recently started reading The Hobbit, which is why it had a lot of interest to me as well. So that's why I went to see it. But again, I would still recommend you go see it. It's a beautifully shot movie. I think they did a really great job.
Definitely.
And it's Lily Collins. I mean, I'm seeing a lot of her as well, by the way. Totally irrelevant to this whole discussion. I'm seeing a lot of Lily Collins just everywhere.
Isn't it funny that you go see someone in a film or a TV series and then the next day you see them again? An example of this is Christina Applegate from the new Netflix series Dead to Me. I watched that season. We're actually going to be talking about that in a new episode, so stay tuned for our next episode coming very soon. But I then went and watched a Friends episode, and it was like guest star Christina Applegate. And I'm like,
oh, yeah.
You know, you just see sometimes the same person.
Yeah, at the moment, I'm just seeing a lot of Lily Collins, which total kudos to her. She is making that bank. Absolutely. And whatever. She did a really good job as well. But we're going to focus now on, which only occurred to me at the beginning of the show. This wasn't in the original plan, but I think it's absolutely worth talking about, is the new Ted Bundy film starring Zac Efron. It's got a really long title, like Shockingly Wicked, like Wicked, Something Evil and Absolutely Vile.
Yeah. You're close, I think.
It's a very long. It's a very long title. Obviously, if you don't know the story, the comments are, you know, were from the judge during Ted Bundy's trial. So something I want to touch on right now is that at the moment, this new Zac Efron film this new Ted Bundy film is out at the moment, and it was a straight to Netflix film. Interesting choice as well, because it's a biopic film, but it didn't go to cinema. So I find that quite interesting. But what I actually want to focus on is how on Netflix there were the original recordings of Ted Bundy tapes. And that was a documentary released, I think, a year or two ago. Mm-hmm. And what people don't know is that both the film and the documentary were made by the same person. So I read a really interesting article the other day that explains that the two films are meant to be connected, because a lot of people were saying, why didn't we get to see any of the, this is a bit of a spoiler, by the way, so absolute spoiler, if you haven't seen the latest Ted Bundy film, go watch it, this is a spoiler if you don't like blood, but go watch it first. A lot of people were complaining that you don't actually see Ted Bundy committing any murders in the film, except for right at the end, and that's like 30 seconds.
Ah.
So the whole film focuses purely on him, on his original arrest and also the trial.
Yes.
In that film way, and also his escapes and Lily Collins, who plays his partner. Oh my God, I absolutely love it.
That was a good segue. Collins.
I know. That was the segue I should have made in the beginning. I totally forgot she was in the film. So, and also Lily Collins, who plays his girlfriend. And so a lot of people were saying, excuse me, why, getting excited here, but a lot of people were saying, why aren't we seeing any murder in the film? This is a bit boring, like we want to see the action. The whole point, according to this article, is that you hear about it and learn about it from the documentary.
Right, so there's that connection.
Correct, so you watch the tapes first of him explaining the murders, and you learn the nitty-gritty details. And the film is meant to explore the perspective of everyone else, not Ted Bundy. So this is really interesting with coming back to our discussion on Rocketman and Bohemian Rhapsody, where the film, in a sense, actually had nothing to do with Ted Bundy. It had to do with the people around him and the people that interacted with him, how people were perplexed of his possible innocence, the people that were charmed by him and, you know, doubted his guiltiness at all, the people who were in love with him, like his girlfriend, and then also a woman that married him in court and ended up having his baby after he'd been executed.
So it's very much looking at the people on the exterior
Correct.
Of the character.
That's right.
And this is the point we raised with, as you said, with our discussion with Bohemian Rhapsody Correct. And Rocketman.
Correct. And this, I think, is one of those biopics where, unlike all the others we've discussed, you're not meant to find out anything.
Mm.
You don't watch it to learn about Ted Bundy. It's to make you question it even more, because this particular movie treats you like an outsider.
Mm.
Like, you don't actually know who Ted Bundy really is. You're seeing some of it from his perspective, but most of the scenes that you watch with him claiming his innocence and what he's doing in jail, a lot of that was already known to the public. So you're seeing a lot of what you already know, but now you get to be questioned more and you get to see other perspectives.
Mm.
And a lot of people are criticizing this film because it's slow moving and boring and doesn't focus on anything important. I think that is the point. It's not meant to show you anything significant. It's meant to give you a little bit more insight, but then also push you out the door quickly after you found out.
And it's almost that the impact comes later. You know, you finish watching this film and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, whatever. And then later thinking about what was in that film, that's when the impact comes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And these are real pieces of entertainment that really challenge the thinking and really challenge the mind, because it's not that immediate effect, it's not that immediate impact, but rather that later effect. And when you're talking with people as well, you say, oh, there wasn't actually much in that film, and then you say, but there was that bit, and then you kind of go, oh yeah, and I guess that bit could relate to that, and then you kind of get on this trail. That's some of the most powerful film and entertainment, is that when the impact hits later.
Correct.
It's very hard to master, though, because if you kind of go along that line, it can work negatively as well.
Correct. So there were still parts of, I think this also comes to a much bigger idea of, when is entertainment meant to entertain? When is entertainment meant to inform?
You know,
and making sure you have a good balance. Because this is one of those films where you could get bored easily. It is slow moving and they do take their time with some bits. And so originally you might turn it off and be like, ugh, well, that was boring. That didn't inform me at all. But then it's only later now. And I actually quite enjoyed it. At the time, I kept thinking, I'm really glad they're not showing me the killing, because that's not what we're here to see.
Exactly.
Well, it depends if you're actually here to see the killing. But
I think it's an interesting point you're raising, Hannah, because it comes back to Tolkien as well, about thwarting the audience's expectations. People probably went into that to be like, oh, I'm expecting to see these, you know, violent murders, and, you know, it's going to be really confronting. And then they kind of walk out like, oh, I didn't actually see that much of it. But it's doing that really, it sets a film apart. And I think even if we look at Rocketman and Bohemian Rhapsody, Rocketman thwarted the expectations with having that musical-esque.
Yes.
I think Bohemian Rhapsody almost thwarted the expectations in not just being about Freddie, but being about the band and really in-depth on the band as well as exterior characters. So if we could relate this to a big question, I think a success of a biopic comes down to actually thwarting audience expectations.
I would agree with that.
You'd agree?
I would agree with that. What do you think that, shockingly evil, vile, etc.
Extremely wicked, shockingly evil and vile.
Beautiful.
Got it. I did a fact check.
So, quote unquote, the title. Do you think it needed the documentary tapes? Do you think it actually needs those in order to reinforce the movie's purpose? Do you think it could have existed as a standalone?
It's an interesting thing, because I've actually never heard of it before, where they've got two separate pieces of entertainment and they're released at the same time, or roughly around the same
time. Well, they weren't released at the same time.
Sorry, one was 2 years before.
That's right.
But they complement each other.
Yeah, the same filmmaker.
I think it's unique, but I think also when you make a film, you've got to rely on the film being standalone, because the risk you run is when you make a film to rely on some other piece of evidence or some other piece of entertainment, not everyone's going to know that, and not everyone's going to watch the other piece, so then you lose viewers with that.
Yes, I would agree with that, which is because my next question was going to be, why didn't they make more emphasis on the documentary? But that's the point. They didn't want you to have to rely on the documentary to understand what was going on.
So that's good, almost, that they don't have that huge emphasis.
That's right. And so now it makes me want to go and watch the actual documentary with the tapes to learn more about what exactly was going on.
It's a real kind of it's a cycle almost that, you know, you might watch a documentary, then you might be like, okay, let's go watch the film. You watch the film, oh, I wouldn't mind really a bit more about that. Let's go back and watch the documentary.
Absolutely.
And I think that's really beneficial as long as people have that motivation and have that, yes, let's do it. And both sound like they do work really well in getting audience anticipation and engagement to be able to then go watch the other.
Yes, absolutely. One more very quick point I'd like to make, because, you know, for this film, I watched a really interesting video last night on Wisecrack, which is a YouTube channel, and they do a lot of movie and television analysis as well. So I'd highly recommend you go check that out, because we do source some of our analysis from them.
Yes.
Well, I do. So they released a video called What Went Wrong with the Ted Bundy film. I don't actually think anything went wrong, but one point they made, which I found really interesting, was the concept of aesthetic.
Okay.
And I think we can relate this to a lot of other pieces that we've spoken about, where people complain about putting a heartthrob like Zac Efron at the forefront of this movie.
Look, this is a point that I love talking about. No, because I really enjoy talking about this almost necessity for filmmakers these days to be like, okay, I've got a really great film. Oh, okay, we need a big star because that's going to get the audiences in. Mm. And it makes sense. I totally understand it, but I'd love it when I go to see a piece of film or a TV series and I don't know any of the actors. And you're just like, I can really invest in it because I don't know you as this person. I don't know you as this person.
Why is you watching as being like, that's Troy Bolton?
Well, that's the thing. And it's hard because you kind of then question, okay, we'll say it with someone that we didn't know as well. Would there be that investment and would there be that anticipation to go watch it? It's a tightrope. It's a tightrope because it's walking that line of saying, we want it to be its own film. We don't want anyone to have expectations. Be like, oh, Troy Bolton, you know, what's it called? Yeah. What's his song called?
Wildcats.
Yeah, you know, obviously that's going to happen. But then again, we want to get audiences in.
Yes. So normally I would agree with you in terms of it's all just a cash grab and everything like that. But in this one case, I'm going to disagree. They needed Zac Efron, not just because it brought people in, that's a separate thing, but because I believe he was actually the right person to play Ted Bundy. Because again, this movie wasn't about Ted Bundy, what he did.
It was about the revolving character.
Correct. And it's about how the world portrayed him, perceived him, etc. Zac Efron, good looking. They dressed him in beautiful outfits, a really nice color palette. You were constantly drawn to him, the way he spoke and how charming he was in the courtroom, how girls just fell for him. You needed that. You needed, and I myself was doubting his guiltiness throughout the movie too, where I was looking at him and thinking like, wow, he is doing such a good job at convincing people otherwise. You look at him and you think, wow, man, like he can't be a serial killer, like surely not. And that's
the whole point.
And that's what they tried to do.
Yeah.
And that's why they had Zac Efron.
I love that point. I love discussing that because there are films, I can't think of any at the top of my head. It's always the way you can lean your life.
Exactly.
But it's this idea that, you know, when filmmakers and production teams behind films and television series, they cast someone everyone knows because they want to get that popularity up, but it doesn't sometimes work.
And then it's a bit like that actor really lowered their standards.
It's a tightrope. It is a tightrope. And look, I would love to play tightrope now just to, you know, get us in the mood. But we're unfortunately going to have to wrap the episode up for today. Hannah, what fantastic discussion we've had today.
Absolutely.
We have been looking at the idea of biopic, so biographies translated to the screen in films. For those of you who are just listening now, you've got all our SAS episodes online on Omni as well as Facebook, all our links to our episodes there. But to recap what we discussed today, we discussed Rocketman and Bohemian Rhapsody. We had a bit of a SAS debate on and SAS head-to-head on those two. We looked at Tolkien as well as just the Ted Bundy documentary as well as film, which are both available on Netflix.
Yes, so absolutely.
It's been a fantastic episode and we've got plenty more episodes coming up. This is episode 5 of our podcast season and we have got another around 7 to go. We're going to be hopefully doing 12 episodes as part of this season. So there's plenty more to come. And as always, if you have any ideas of what you would like us to talk about, anything you would like to discuss, or if you actually want to put a voice memo on the show, come on the show, get in touch with us on our Facebook page. We are more than happy to take your requests or your interests.
Absolutely. So in the meantime, keep up with your screen, air, and stage. In other words, Nick,
stay sassy.